It's Tuesday, the 20th of April, and it's time to get your grin on with the Grincast, here to discuss World of Gaming from the past week. I'm your host Ace, and joining me are Rhodes.
Hello.
Nikki.
Hello.
And Winx.
Ahoy there.
This, as you've probably been able to see, is episode 299, which means we got a 300th episode next week. Make sure you tune in for that. We got special things planned. Maybe one special thing. Maybe half a special. Just listen.
The thing is, you say this, but none of us know what it is except you.
Oh, I think I know. He's going to kick one of us into a pit.
Oh, he's going to fire us live on the podcast.
This is Grincast! But before that, you've got to listen to this week's episode. So what's everyone been playing? Let's start at the top of the Discord alphabet. Rhodes.
I think you'll find your top of the Discord alphabet, Ace Lister.
But the host goes last and then segues seamlessly into the news.
Favoritism, I see. Favoritism. I've been playing a game I can't talk about because it's Nier Replicant. So I'm going to talk about Slay the Spire instead.
Say the full title.
What, of Nier Replicant?
Yeah.
Give me a moment. Let me just take a swig of water real quick. And Google it, of course.
Nope.
I've been playing Nier Replicant version 1.22474487139...
Lovely.
But I can't talk about it, so I'm going to talk about Slay the Spire instead. There we go. Just cut that first base. It's fine. So that's why it's pretty good. It's just a card game where you go on a dungeon crawl. I'm not very good at it. I've not even beat the second boss yet. I've played it for 20 hours. I'm not very good at video games. Oh, don't listen to my opinion on this podcast. Don't listen to my opinion in articles. Nikki's go. Good best. Goodbye.
Okay, Nikki, what about you?
Oh, wow. Okay, that was speed round. Yeah, so...
Okay, Winx.
Oh my god, are we doing like a Grincast speedrun?
I didn't even say Gachi yet. No, just screw all of you. No, I could keep playing Monster Hunter Rise. I could play one of or many of the new games that have come out recently. But for some reason, I had an urge this last week to go back to Ghost Recon Breakpoint. I don't know why. I just did. So I think I picked it up for like a fiver way back in the summer of last year. Played it for apparently 6 hours and never touched it ever again. Jumped in thinking, oh yeah, there's been loads of patches and updates. Like they did a whole big, like a huge update. Like it's probably like a much better experience now. No, it's much worse. it was buggy when I last played it. It's worse now. I've fallen through the map about 3 or 4 times. I had a fantastic thing at one point where I camped. Move the time forward to nighttime because I wanted to infiltrate this base at night. And then it did a little, you know, here's the time lapse of time moving. And when it panned back down to me, I got thrown across the island. other bugs as well, such as not being able to aim, just not existing anymore. Enemies despawning, enemies duplicating themselves. I had a fantastic bug where I headshot someone and 2 bodies fell out. But when the game works, it's surprisingly a lot of fun. One of the new features they've added, I don't know when, but like since I last played it, is they added like a whole bunch of parameters to let you tweak the kind of like survival aspect of it, and I've kept it fairly just as it was. But one of the things I quite like is there's a thing called like it's either True Night or Real Night, and basically what it does is it just makes the game darker at night, but it makes it dark to the point where like you actually need to use night vision and like you know and like artificial light sources and the moon, although not as much as I expected, really make a difference in terms of like where you can see and where enemies can see. And it makes infiltrating bases at night a lot more fun, because it was kind of one of the things of like Wildlands that I had an issue with, was it didn't really matter if it was day or night, enemies could just still spot you from a mile away. Whereas like if you're not in light, if you're not in their torch range, they're not going to see you. And it's really, really nice. And it kind of changes things up a little bit, which is great because, you know, trying to level up the field medic requires class, you know, needing to do those challenges. And for some reason, the field medic has a number of challenges that require you to take down enemies at melee range. Why a medic needs to be able to slit people's throat? Oh, actually, I suppose.
Scalpels.
Yeah, just go for the jugular, Achilles heel. So, yeah, that's been. I've just been running around. I think it's Aurora. Is how you pronounce the island's name. It's too big. The landmass is way too big. It took me an hour to get to one objective because I fell down the cliff and had. I mean, admittedly, I could have maybe gotten a car or a helicopter, but no, I decided to scale the mountain like a mountain goat. Did it. Took an hour. I don't know if I'm enjoying this game, but I can't put it down.
I don't think Aurora is too big. I just think there's too many elevated land masses. It's too mountainous.
Yeah, Wildlands had this benefit. Like, I liked Wildlands because each region felt really distinct. Like, you know, there was the salt flats, there was the kind of desert, there was, you know, every region felt very different, whereas in Breakpoint it doesn't. Yes, there's the swamp and there's the kind of deserty bit and all the snowy mountains, but everything is just surrounded by one giant mountain. Like, it's just all based on one giant mountain. But like, something that's I find interesting, and I don't know why it's like this, I get the impression that like they made the landmass, then they populated the sort of gameplay spaces, because there's a lot of places that like just don't make sense, both from a point of view of like, why would you design this like this, to why is it that this isn't a gameplay space? And like, I've just seen some really weird stuff with the AI where like they've clearly had to like just kind of retroactively fit, I guess, buildings and encampments into places where it doesn't make sense. Like, there was one base halfway up a mountain that I was just looking at it from like the drone's point of view, like surveying all the enemies, and I was like, this just makes no sense. Like, from an actual gameplay space, like, it just made no sense at all. And the AI couldn't even navigate around it. So it was easy pickings for me, but just kind of strange. And there's a lot of that in Breakpoint. You find places and they just don't really work. But it's fun. In terms of the actual moment-to-moment gunplay, like, it's an improvement on Wildlands, and I'm enjoying it. Whether I'll actually quote-unquote finish it, I don't know. It's huge, it has level caps, and there's a raid, apparently. That's all I got.
What about the Terminator tie-in missions? Are those still available to play?
Oh, yeah. Yes, you can turn them... There's things called world parameters. You can basically flick a switch and put the world back into the state during some of the events. Apparently there's a Rainbow Six Siege event where the island gets covered in poisonous gas. That's a thing. But because I don't have the season pass, I think I can only do like the first mission of each respective quote-unquote event. But I have Terminator face paint. Don't know where it came from, but I have it. There's a Tomb Raider Easter egg hunt coming at some point. That's what the roadmap said. And yeah, this game's still getting content updates.
When you mentioned that you'd just come back into it, I opened up Ubisoft Connect, as it's called now, since the first time they changed from Uplay to Ubisoft Connect. And I had a 19 gigabyte patch for Ghost Recon Breakpoint. I don't know when the last time is, like how long ago they changed to Ubisoft Connect, but yeah, it's been some while.
Ew.
Winx, what about yourself? What have you got to tell us?
I've been playing one game, especially a game where you say no a lot. It's called Say No More. It's an indie game, kind of set in an overtly optimistic dystopia where the word no has been nearly eradicated from the collective consciousness, as it seems. I guess it's about really. You're one of three interns who've just arrived or been hired at some nondescript office, and almost as immediately as you are hired, your soul gets crushed because your manager decides to steal your lunch, and it's all because you can't say no to him, which is debilitating. But luckily, I guess a Walkman falls onto your head, and inside the Walkman is the self-help tape, and yeah, it just guides you through the game, teaching you all the different kinds of no's and different inflections and tones, and with little supplementary like taunts that you can throughout the game. Like, you can cackle, you can fake listen and slow clap. So far, my favorite one to do, like, there's a combination of demeaning things to do in the office is holding a laugh for a long time and then slowly clapping at them and then just holding the no button down as long as possible and then charging just the laziest, like, niet possible, like a Russian no. And it's so cathartic just to do it. It's like, niet. And yeah, I played on stream and it was a lot less, it was less involved than I thought it was going to be, or at least what I hoped for. It was a lot of fun and it was like some touching moments too. And it has like a lot of better story arcs than most AAA games even. And I've
got,
yeah.
I've got a really important question for you.
Oh yeah, hit me.
What was your favorite no from the game?
Oh, the lazy niet. It's like the, it's like, niet. Oh, it's so good. So good. I think I played it for Nikki and kind of let her role play. And she chose like a Japanese no. I forgot what that sounds like, but Nikki, if you could.
Oh, I can't remember, but it was hilarious to me because even though it was like an aggressive no, it still had the pronunciation to make it polite. So it was like super passive aggressive.
It's on brand. It's on brand, quite honestly. Freaky no. No!
Rocky Horror Picture No, yeah.
Yes, I mean no. Yeah, so the review should be out at some point tomorrow. And yeah, those interested, take a gander. And don't say no, please. I don't cope well with rejection.
Okay. Myself, I finished Yakuza 2, Yakuza Kiwami 2, so I moved on to Yakuza 3 Remastered. And the graphics are not on par with the Kiwami games. I mean, they're okay, but they're definitely rezzed up PlayStation 3 graphics. And none of the mini games are actually fun.
I was just going to ask you about the mini games. Like, what was your favorites? But I guess
none of them. The karaoke moves too fast and doesn't recognize some button presses. The fishing is it's when you get a fish, it's fun to play, but most of the time you're not going to get a fish, so then you run out of bait really quickly. Your inventory space is very limited. What's another mini game? Oh yes, the in the previous game, the previous game, you and Zero, you had the opportunity to become a cabaret, the manager at a cabaret club. You have that option again in this one, and that's also much less fun because rather than being in charge of all the ladies and changing the ice, changing the ashtrays, selecting which lady goes with which customer, now you're in charge of one lady and you have to customize her depending on the overall mood in the club. So you dress her up, and then you go out in the club, and you walk around, you find out what people are saying, like, oh, I wish there were some gorgeous women here. So then you go back, and you doll up your girl in gorgeous outfits and stuff that raise her gorgeous level, rather than cute or sexy. And then you go back out, see if people's moods have changed, see how many customers the lady's getting, and then go back into the room and customize again if required, and then go back out again. And then
did anyone stop you and say, sir, this is a Wendy's?
No, they also did not say, Mr. Future President, please do not go in there. There are children changing. No, this is all part of the game. You have to go in and out of the room to customize depending on what the customers want. And I think my on the first time I tried it, I got 400 yen worth of sales, and that was it. That was really disappointing, and it's not really clear which changes will increase which stats. I mean, some of the outfits are called the gorgeous dress, the sexy dress, the whatever. But just putting that on isn't enough. You need to add some accessories, but those were well out of the price range that early in the game, or it just doesn't tell you which stats it's going to increase. The story is pretty good. It's the overall plot is kind of Superman 3, or Superman 2, whichever one had Lex Luthor trying to buy land and real estate and all those things that kids love. So many 80s movies, kids' movies focused on real estate developers.
Yeah, that's a list right there.
But, that's my experience with Yakuza 3 so far. It might get better once I get back to Tokyo, because the start of the game takes place on the island of Okinawa. Speaking of Japan, the Power Rangers game has got a updates recently, the Power Rangers Battle for the Grid. You can now play as Ryu and Chun-Li from Street Fighter 2, which was very unexpected. Ryu joins as the Crimson Hawk Ranger and Chun-Li as the Blue Phoenix Ranger. I mean, when the game came out, we knew that it was going to get frequent updates and season passes, etc. But tie-ins to Capcom games was not part of the roadmap.
Do you think we'll get like a yellow Ken or like a green Cammy or like, oh my God, or like E Honda, but like in a really tight skin tight Power Ranger suit? When?
Do you think the Street Fighter characters will like morph into a bigger, stronger Street Fighter?
They all join together and become Zangief.
Oh, Zangief. Oh. Oh, I wish I was Zangief.
So yeah, that, as I say, that came out of nowhere. It's not out yet. It was just announced. The pack is going to go on sale on the 25th of May alongside of Power Rangers Battle for the Grid Super Edition, which contains all pieces of DLC released for the game so far, including the Street Fighter pack. Coming out on PlayStation 4, Xbox One, Switch, Steam, and Stadia. I played Power Rangers Battle for the Grid. I reviewed it for the site when it first came out. It wasn't great because it relies on player versus player, and the multiplayer servers were not populated at all. I'm guessing since it went multi-platform, it's gotten a bit better. Otherwise, I mean, they wouldn't still be supporting the game, clearly.
When did it release? Was it like 3 years ago? I can't remember.
It was 2019, yeah.
Oh, okay. Goodness.
Across March, April, and sometime in quarter three, because I forgot to update with the actual date. Yeah, I scored it 4 out of 10, because I couldn't play any games. I mean, I connected to 3 fights in a row, and they were against the same person.
Ooh.
So now there's like 4 people playing, right?
One on each platform, maybe? Another game that needs players and also had a tie-in announced. Dead by Daylight is... They teased Chapter 20 with a reveal trailer that shows off that they're going to introduce something from Resident Evil as part of the 25th anniversary of that franchise.
Am I, like, the only person that's... Anytime there's news about Dead by Daylight is just generally stunned that game is still going.
It's got so many players, man. Like, it's got hundreds of thousands of people who play, and I don't understand.
I think it's more from YouTube, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so, but... There's someone whose gimmick on this podcast used to be starting every podcast by shitting on Dead by Daylight. Let me tell you, it was justified shitting.
Well, they're still updating. They had a big update not too long ago where they updated the graphics, and I think it was just before it came out. It's just before the new gen consoles came out. But yeah, the trailer that they released shows a Umbrella logo keychain, looks like, and someone on a hook, which is where the killers put sacrifice the other players.
I think it's an important update for Dead by Daylight, to be fair, because a lot of its player base comes from the licensed killers that they've got and characters that they've got. Mm-hmm. I think they've done like a couple of like original sort of characters recently that I mean, you can tell they're based on other things. Like they've got a clown in it, which is obviously based on Pennywise from it. But
Most recent killer is the Trickster, I believe.
Yeah, and it's things like that, and like people just don't buy into it. Like they're not really fussed by them. So I think bringing in someone like Resident Evil, I would assume it would be the Mr. X or the Tyrant. It would be one of the tyrants that doesn't have a gun. Because
I was gonna say like maybe even Nemesis.
Nemesis had a rocket launcher though.
And yeah, what's wrong with that?
Yeah. Mate, have you played Dead by Daylight? Have you seen how quick you move? Imagine they added rocket launches. Oh my god. It'd be unplayable for the survivors. Unless you're Chris Redfield and you also get a gun. At which point you may as well just play Umbrella Corps.
Well, you can imagine the male character is probably going to be Chris Redfield, and the female survivors are going to be Claire Redfield, and then they're going to have skins, so Claire will look like Ada Wong and Chris will look like Leon.
I think it's cute that you think Claire Redfield's going to get a shot in this, Ace.
An outrage. Like, there needs to be tofu representation here.
Yeah, where's Hunk?
Yeah, where's that tofu husbando? Where's Hunk?
Wasn't, like, the most recent update for Dead by Daylight like a K-pop idol or something?
I don't know, but I hope so.
I only know this because like it was just everywhere on Twitter.
The killer is just K-pop stans, and you just have to escape them. Like it's just the whole thing takes part on Twitter, and you just have to get away from them.
So you just close your Twitter account, surely?
Your left click buttons and work on your mouse. That's it. Instead of repairing generators, you've got to repair your mouse and keyboard to close the web page.
Without a suitable segue, our next news story is that Double Fine have tweeted that Psychonauts 2 is definitely coming out this year. It's real, it is playable, it is coming.
They said that about Cyberpunk, though.
So. Yeah, notice the tweet doesn't say it's good. It's playable.
When it's ready.
Ooh. Question. Does anyone actually care?
That's how they do. Yeah, it's all right. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I mean, yeah.
That wasn't me. I realized I came out wrong. That wasn't me trying to be super harsh. That's just like I haven't heard anything about Psychonauts 2 from anyone in so long. Like,
yeah.
Like people just maybe really like
mention about it in so long.
True.
To be fair, I also took this approach with Outriders when we first spoke about that a couple of months back, and then everyone started playing that game all of a sudden. So maybe you've just blessed Psychonauts 2 with like some game grin blessing that only we can give.
I think you'll find that that so many people try to play Outriders.
Yeah, well.
Do they actually curse it by accident?
Oh, shit. Do we bless and are we a blessing and a curse? We give them players, but the game doesn't work.
Psychonauts 2 is going to release, millions of people are going to buy it, and it's just not going to work on a Windows computer.
Wait, I want to put this potential curse / blessing to the test. Quick, Nikki, finger sign. Apple are going to go bankrupt. There you go. We'll see how that happens. Wait, no, it's going to backfire.
We've got twice as much money now. Sorry.
No, no, you go.
I was like thinking about it, about Psychonauts, and I just kind of, for some reason, maybe I'm in an alternate dimension, but I thought there was a Psychonauts TV show, like animated show, but I don't think there is, or was. I think I'm from a different timeline, guys.
I think you're thinking of the VR game somehow.
No, because it's definitely like, I remember, it's a false memory, but I remember it, I feel like it was like on a Cartoon Network kind of like advertisement, but Like, no, nowhere to be seen. So I'm just surprised that that's not a reality.
I've got nothing to add to this.
Yeah, sorry.
I didn't like Psychonauts. I'm sorry.
I played it for a So I Tried for GameGrin.com, and yeah, it was all right. And I just haven't gotten around to going back to it. I think I might have uninstalled it at some point because I was like, I'm never going to get back to that, am I?
Deleted the Steam account that it was on.
Well, speaking of accounts that get deleted, or accounts issues, I suppose, miHoYo, the developer behind Genshin Impact, have announced that they're making another game for iOS and Android called Tears of Themis, a otome, which is a visual novel, Romance X Detective X Adventure game. Is that a mathematic equation?
It's actually the add-on for Nier Replicant.
So this is the bit that adds the whole Android guys that we can date, right?
Yes.
I mean, that's essentially all this is going to be. It's just going to be a dating game. All of these anime gentlemen look all right, I guess. Not my type. But, yeah.
I'm kind of worried about where the tears come into this.
It's when you say no to having coffee with them. They just cry for 7 days straight and die of dehydration.
Just say no. Whoa. Okay.
Also, sorry. Just to backtrack a second. I just want to point a finger metaphorically at Ace and just be like, they announced two-factor authentication for Genshin, so maybe we'll stop talking about hacked accounts at some point in the near future.
They're going to implement it, and then like it's going to fail.
To be fair, they said they were going to do a trial run in China, but they didn't say for how long. So the rest of us are screwed for a few more months.
Move to China, it's fine.
It's interesting that miHoYo, like, just it's weird as well because like they've announced this. And there's also been like internal like reports / leaks, if you will, that they've extended the plan apparently was to support Genshin for 5 years, and now they've extended it to 12 years because of just how much money it's making them.
What are they? Bungie?
I think they have more money than Bungie, which is saying something. And they've also got Honkai Impact that's just still going. So like they've got two very successful games on the go, and they're going to do this third one. Admittedly, this looks like it'll be a lot, just based on the fact that the visual novel will be a lot less upkeep than something like Genshin, but yeah, they're doing well for themselves. It's just, they just maybe need to work on their community engagement. And the community also need to chill. That's also aimed at the Genshin community. Just chill, people, please.
Yeah, just in general, everyone needs to chill.
Yeah, just chill the fuck out.
Chilled, you know, like Sony just chilled on by changing course on ending the support for digital titles on the PlayStation 3 and the PlayStation Vita. They announced yesterday that, at time of recording, that while the PlayStation Portable will still lose access to the PlayStation Store on the 2nd of July, and as we mentioned in last week's episode, there's lots of games that's on PlayStation Portable that just don't work online currently. But the PlayStation 3 and the Vita are not going to lose access. You're going to still be able to buy games digitally for the foreseeable future, which, you know, could change in October. I thought it was especially funny because Top Hat Studios, a publisher of mainly visual novels, mainly 18-plus rated ones, announced that they would be releasing two games on the Vita, and they would be the last two, or amongst the last two games released for the Vita before the store shut down. And then a day later, Sony said, oh, yeah, actually, of course, they could still be the final two games released on the Vita. Sony could decide to not release any new games, just allow people to buy old games. I thought it was funny.
It's interesting. It's like, is it because of the sort of outcry and pushback? Or was it because everyone went and panic bought games and they were like, oh, money?
Hmm. It was upon further reflection, according to the PlayStation blog.
So, yes.
Honestly, I don't see why they don't just integrate them all into the PS4 store and put that on these devices. Like, surely that makes the most sense going forward.
Is it some kind of weird hardware limitation?
No, it's. I think it's just literally like cost. As silly as it sounds, like I can. This is the only like logical thing that makes sense in my mind, at least, is like they're probably paying a stupid amount for the servers that host everything for each platform, and they're just like, well, we're not breaking even on the monthly cost of running the server for the PSP and the Vita and the PS3. But like it kind of doesn't make sense in the sense you'd hope that they could just merge it all into one and kind of find a way to cut the cost. But yeah, I don't know. But when you make it, on the flip side of that, when you make it harder to buy things, like there's no reason that the website shouldn't let you, like the PlayStation Store on the web is terrible now. It's absolutely terrible. And I remember, like, I mean, I still have bookmarks of like PS3 games that I was eventually going to pick up from the web page, and now they just don't work, obviously. So I don't know why, because obviously on your respective console it doesn't matter. Like, fair enough that I can't see the Vita games whilst I'm on the PS4 store on my PS4, because that would just be confusing to someone, because they might think, oh, I can play that. No, you can't, because you're on the wrong platform. Makes sense. But why can't the web store just, like, I just Sony, for whatever reason, and they've been very public about this in the past, they just seem really against backwards compatibility, but even just allowing these games, like the sort of, what's the word, preservation, if you will, of these storefronts. Like,
to be fair to Sony, I do understand it, because I think people often forget that compared to Microsoft, Sony do not have the kind of money to just throw away. Like, overall as a company, they don't really make that much profit, especially compared to Microsoft, who just would swallow them whole if they wanted to. The problem with Sony is that because they've insisted on just changing everything from generation to generation, it means that they've kind of backed themselves into this position now. Like, one of the things Microsoft got right, and the reason why everything is so efficient now, is that they use the same architecture throughout, and they use the same store throughout. So those games can all carry over, like that store can all carry over. Whereas Sony were like, let's make it something on the PS3 really bizarre that no one can use. And then they're like, this was stupid. Let's do something different on the PS4. And it's like, they shot themselves in the foot. So, like, I understand why they're doing it, but they've also kind of put themselves in this corner anyway.
100%. That PS3, just... I mean, they did well to, like, try at least with backwards compatibility, but they definitely, as soon as they got burnt a little bit, they were like, nah, I ain't having none of this. And I feel like that's been scarred since then. And also, yeah, with that stupid PlayStation Store, which was mediocre at best, now they've completely kind of ruined it for me, at least, as a customer. Because I had all these games on a wish list where I'll, like, look through and be like, oh, that's on sale. I remember I liked this one. Got rid of that now. So it's like, I just don't use the PlayStation Store anymore. So I wonder how many other people that's kind of affected too in that regards.
Yeah. No, definitely. I think eventually Sony will get it right and they'll figure out how to make those PS3 games backwards compatible. I think, in honesty, their like look of not enjoying backwards compatibility is genuine, because they can't figure it out. Because, well, I don't think they can come out as a company and be like, we can get PS3 games working on PS5 easy. Because, well, as soon as they say it, like, the people will be like, well, go on then.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, right? Because the kind of the whole reason, but a big part why the PlayStation 5 is doing, I guess, okay, is because it can play PS4 games. Yeah. Otherwise, it'd be screwed.
Yeah, you're right. But the issue is those PS3, like, the architecture between the PS3 and the PS4 is what happens, is the issue. And that's what people want when they say backwards compatibility. I think like people love their Xbox Series X because they can literally play three generations of games on that. Like they can go to the 360, they can go to the original Xbox.
They can go all the way back to the original for most of them, at least.
Exactly. And it's like Sony, you know, like not to get into like the whole console war or anything like that, but the PS1 and the PS2 have some of the biggest libraries of games you will ever experience on any console. And they're, and the PS3, and those three are all locked away right now. Like you can't access them on the 4 or the 5. Like that's why people want them, because there's so much there to get a hold of that they just can't.
The thing as well is like, not to spend ages on this, but like Sony seemed really like determined to make PlayStation Now their streaming service a thing. And that had a lot of like PS2 and PS3 games on it. Whereas like, and I know Microsoft have just started doing the streaming thing, but like they had game, like it's built into Game Pass. Like they had this library of all these titles and then just went, oh yeah, you can stream them now. Like it just kind of was like a natural progression, whereas Sony were just like, no, you want to play those games? No, you got to get this additional service that's separate to Game Pass. And like no one I know has PlayStation Now. And the only thing I know about PlayStation Now is it has House of the Dead in it. That's literally the only thing I know.
Take umbrage with Rhodes saying that Sony doesn't have a lot of money, because I know they don't have Microsoft level money, but the PlayStation 5 has sold the most and made the most money out of this generation so far, at least.
The thing is with Sony and the PlayStation 5 though, and the Xbox Series X, is that they both sell at a loss, and it's the problem is that Sony need the games to make the sales, so to speak, which I guess when you think about it like that, almost suggests why they don't want backwards compatible games, because Sony need you to buy games. Like they're funding, like, because if I remember, I don't know if this is still true today, but a couple of years ago the PlayStation division of Sony was the only part of Sony that made money. Like it literally carries the company. So like, are they in a position where they can be like, oh, we just made this new console, we're selling it at a loss, just pop your PS2 games in and crack on?
You just want to add something, just because you intrigued me. They may not have Microsoft levels of money, but according to the infinite wisdom that is Wikipedia, PlayStation has $40 billion more worth than Konami.
Well, yeah, but that's, PlayStation is a much bigger brand than Konami.
Fuck you, Konami.
You want pachinko machines over air. We know it.
No, I just want them to give all of their IPs to someone like who'll actually make shit with them and do good with them.
Mm-hmm.
They're making stuff with their
back in on this.
Pachinko machines.
Like, all right, I'll give them credit. Like, the Yu-Gi-Oh video games are fun, but you got Silent Hill. You got, you know, this. No, I'm not going to get into this rant.
Yeah, I get you. I feel you.
Me.
Right, something that we discussed in our weekly meeting a couple of weeks ago, I thought, a couple of us thought, would make a interesting main topic, and that is, when should you review a game?
Never.
The moment it finished.
Because the argument was made that you shouldn't review a expansion for World of Warcraft until it's had its three quarterly patches or whenever they release them, because
I don't agree with that.
Completed product.
Like, I don't want to be that guy, but if I pay for something, like let's just take like the reviewing aspect of, like, you know, like we'll get codes from companies for free, for example, to review. If I bought a game and it was shit, Cyberpunk is a great example of this. I bought Cyberpunk and it's a mess. Like it was a mess when it launched. I'm not going to be like, oh, I'll wait a year because when they've got a few patches out, it might be all right before I give anyone my opinion. No, I've already paid.
I'm actually thinking about this, and you've kind of just said what I wanted to say, which is that, like, realistically, like, I suppose the stance that has to be taken is, like, what is the product that you're going to buy? Like, what do you, like, I give you money, what do I get? I get broken, buggy game. Well, I want to know about the broken, buggy game beforehand.
Yeah.
And it's, I think as well, like, it's not, the caveat to all of this is that like it's kind of expected now that games are going to have day one patches. Games are going to have maybe a big content update. Most games have some sort of roadmap, even if they're not a live service game. Quite a lot of games have roadmaps now, so it's kind of expected. So it's, but I think that initial review, like the call has to be made on what is there on day one.
Yeah, if there's a significant change, you can surely do a big update if the update itself or the patch itself is big. But I do agree that if the first day it comes out, that is it. When it's gone green, it's ready to go, that's it. In an ideal world, you'd review a game just before the release date and just have it so that when the review is published at the same time as the game. But again, like day one patches are also a thing. So like I had a problem like that recently where I reviewed a game before it was released, like just like a few days before release. And then the day one patch was so big that I had to rewrite my complete review, not because the game was better, but because it was worse. It was just mind-blowing how many things they got rid of, and how many more glitches were like added on to it. It's just, and yeah, so I think day one,
like there's nothing wrong with revisiting a game. Like the No Man's Sky is a great example of this. That game when it came out was so barren and contentless that it deserved like the fours and fives and sixes that it got, whereas now, fair enough, it's a good game now. It deserves the praise it gets now. But it's basically a different product. Like, if I was saying to someone in 20... When did it come out? 2016? I don't remember.
2016, yeah.
Yeah, so if it was 2016, I played that game how it was on release, and I reviewed it, I'd have been like, no, don't get this game, avoid it. But if you asked me to review it now, I'd be like, if you want an adventure game where you fly around space and you discover stuff, this game's great. You should definitely go for it. Like... What?
It's that problem of, you know, you've heard of the ship of Theseus, where it's a ship, yeah. And every time it gets broken down or needs replacing, you'll replace that one part, like the sail of just wooden planks, until the ship is a completely different ship, but yeah. It's still under the same moniker. It's like, you can't review the same... It will change throughout, and until there's like a big major change, that's when a review could be updated if it needs to be, but... Like you said from the very beginning, if it comes out day one, you're going to give that review as it was day one, as you were given it onto your plate. You don't review Feud like that either.
I think part of this, the initial conversation we had about this as well, was also to do like Metacritic. And let's be honest, Metacritic is frustrating from like the point of view of like you can't edit once a score is given, that's it. Because for example, there could be a case that's, you know, an honest mistake or something where like maybe a review gets done and it turns out that actually they were sent a completely the wrong build. They were sent like the beta build rather than the release build. And it's like, well, that's actually just a completely wrong impression. So in that instance, like, yeah, they should be able to adjust the score. But like, I think, but it's also frustrating because obviously Metacritic scores are heavily used by publishers to decide whether or not to continue working with developers. So you kind of have to, yeah, it's a weird middle ground. But I think if you remove Metacritic from the equation, it is just a case of like, what am I getting day one? Like, what is the consumer getting? In the ideal world where you get to review a game on time ahead of, and the reviews go live before release, looking at you, Cyberpunk, you know, you want to be able to give an honest opinion. I mean, I'll take an example of one of mine where I reviewed the most recent Sword Art game, and it was appalling, absolutely appalling. But they came out really quickly and said, look, we're gonna do a big patch. And because they came out so quick and said that, it was like, all right, I'm gonna give you the benefit of the doubt because the game is pretty much unplayable. And then the patch made like no difference. So it was like, right, no, you get the shit score. Like, you're getting that low score because you failed to change it. But if you look at something like Destiny, like, yeah, some of the expansions are bad or at release, even though the year's worth of content might make them better. Beyond Light at launch that first week was phenomenal. Have I played it much since? No, not really. The Taken King pretty much flipped Destiny around. It was incredible. But then Rise of Iron was a bit mediocre. does that mean I should go, we should, you know, go back and adjust the score of the original Destiny? Well, no, because even though they're expansions, they're independent products. And I think they have to be graded on that. Likewise with things like World of Warcraft and MMOs, you should look at the individual expansion and say, is this a satisfying product? Did I enjoy this? But I think that's the wider conversation, as well as like, how are people reviewing games? Like, what are you reviewing it on? Is the score being given on the level of enjoyment, the technical prowess, the comparing it to the last one? Like, how do we, you know?
Going back to No Man's Sky, the PlayStation, I'm looking at the PlayStation 4 scores on Metacritic. Its Metascore is 71. There are 100 critic scores, and only one of them was from this year. The rest were from 2016. One was from 2017. And it's 71 because it was just, the PC version at least was a bit of a broken mess, but clearly people enjoyed it because it got 100, lots of 90s, 80s. I mean, you're halfway down the page before you see 73 and the icon changes from green to yellow.
The original Nier on PS3 has a Metacritic of 68, and that's a yellow. And it has quite a lot of yellow and red reviews, yet that game is getting a remake and is still considered a cult classic.
And yeah, to be fair, a cult classic stems from the fact that it isn't excellent. And I would agree with the idea that the original Nier isn't excellent. It's a great story, but the game is a bit rough. And its remake is earned because of the sequel being fantastic. Like that's the reason it got that remake. And I mean, I guess that adds another element to it. Like a game like Nier Automata has sent people back to that Nier game and gives them like a new light. They look at it a different way. They're more willing to get through what is pretty rough gameplay to get through what is an excellent story. So like, can you even consider that people's understanding of a game changes because of a new game that comes out in the series? Like, we see this with Fallout. I remember Fallout 3 was always considered the best one until Fallout 4 came out and everyone hated Bethesda, so Fallout New Vegas became the best one. Like, a lot of things can change people's perceptions of games.
Yeah. And also, just to go back a second to the Warcraft example, I've just looked at the Metacritic scores for Warcraft, and, you know, the original World of Warcraft has a 93. Most of the, like, there isn't a single one, any of the expansions that come near that. In fact, Battle for Azeroth is what I can see as the lowest, 79. Shadowlands is 81. That's not even second highest. So
maybe just the way we categorize reviews, maybe based on year rather than specific expansions. Like if we're talking about a case like No Man's Sky, where they keep reiterating and they keep adding to expansions and stuff, like just outside the experience, maybe there could be like if Metacritic did have a graph of the review score, maybe the same, just sort of, or an aggregate of all the scores depending on multiple years, so that reviewers can publish the same a different review underneath the same game. Maybe, I don't know, something similar to Steam,
perhaps? Maybe. I mean, there's also the thing like remakes. I mean, that's a remake is another subject altogether. But like, as an example, Super Mario 3D World plus Bowser's Fury, 89 on Metacritic. Yeah. The original Super Mario 3D World, 93.
Yeah, the Fury added a bit.
Yeah. But interestingly, the user score is only like 0.4 of a difference.
You gotta listen to the people then.
I think that's what you've said, like with the year is a good way to look at it, because I imagine every single release of Doom probably has a Metacritic and probably has reviews, even though they are the same. Like in that case, it is exactly the same game, just running on a different platform.
I think another thing as well is it's important to note that it's fine to change your opinion about games. Like there are games that you might think are shit, and they don't even change that much, but a few years later, you just go back and go, you know what? Maybe I was a bit harsh on that. You know, like, sometimes you're in the wrong mood for a game, and you think it's bad, And I know this is like kind of defeats the point of a review when you're trying to do it as objectively as you can, but sometimes you just don't click, but you change taste every couple of years and you do. And like, that's fine as well.
Looking at you, Sonic 06.
Okay, that game is not one of them. That game is trash.
A re-review of Sonic 06, please.
I would like to hand the floor now to Ace Lister to give his opinions on Sonic 06. Thank you.
I'm not doing that.
No, tell us, Ace. Tell us your opinions. If you say nothing, we're going to assume you think it's a 10 out of 10.
It's a hard, hard game, and it doesn't have to be a hard, hard game, because the design choices are what makes it hard, not the fact that it's a difficult game. Just the camera's awful, the movement's awful, the controls are awful.
It's like hard Sonic, that's all.
I like that you started really diplomatically and then you remembered what it was and was like, you know what, actually, no, this game's awful.
You know what, I'd strangle it in the crib.
Wow. Ooh.
Okay,
I was going to finish off the Doom analogy, but oh, never mind.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, shit, I'm crying.
Conclusion, don't let Ace review a game.
Oh, my God. Let not Ace have kids.
Too late.
Oh, shit.
Oh, sorry, just out of the crib. They're out of the crib. It's fine.
Just very quickly, I just want to like just draw attention to Cyberpunk 2077's Metacritic on PS4 has a Metacritic score of 57, and that's based on, oh god, quick math, less than 40 critic reviews. Okay, its user review score is 3.6. That's 3,650 negative reviews.
Ooh.
Yeah, but the problem with user reviews is that they vote with two numbers, don't they? And it's 0 or 10.
They're the ultimate binary.
Yeah.
God, I think we've had like countless conversations like offline about like how scores are just bizarre. Like, I mean, I've mentioned before how like anime reviews, well, one, they're pointless, and two, as far as the community is concerned, anything like a 7 is a masterpiece. Anything less than a 7, it's literally the worst thing to have ever been invented. And it's like, no, there's 10 numbers here. There's 10 different values.
The thing is, well, those PowerPoint reviews are a bit misleading, because some of those reviews are done on the PS5. Like, they aren't all done on a PS4. And like, I guess this brings back to that point of like how there can be a problem with Metacritic, because some people on here haven't actually played Cyberpunk on a PlayStation 4. And they're like, this is a great experience on the PlayStation 5. It's like, well, it's a PS4 game, though. Like, it's not a PS5 game.
Also, like, just wasn't thinking about it. Critic reviews are based on actual published reviews. User reviews, is that just... Could I literally just log in and just do a user review? Like,
yeah, you don't have to play the game. You can just log in and give it a 0 if you want.
So user reviews are non-void. It's like... Yeah.
Well, that's where, like, review bombing is a thing.
Yeah.
I think like, just to bring it all home, like, I think when it comes to when should a game be reviewed, I think at release, the product it is, you can always go back and look at it, but like that, the product has to be intended. If you go to a job interview, you're going to be graded on your performance then and there. So why shouldn't you know, why shouldn't we do games the same? Films as well, like,
I think the analogy is that it is so on point, especially like just even thinking about it, like if you're grading food, like if you're a Michelin, like what are they called? Not chef, judge, critique. There we go. One of those things. It's like you don't like ingest the food and then like 3 days later the chef comes back like, oh, here's some broccoli. Or just tries to shove some seasoning down your throat just to be like, remember the taste. It's like you get it served then and there, and you grade it as such.
Yes, you're reviewing a product as you are experiencing it. You're not basing your review on what it could be, because otherwise no game would get less than 10, because it could be amazing if the developer can fix all these issues.
End of the day, game development is hard. Releasing anything into the world is always going to be a less than pleasant experience, but it's got to be, you know, there's, you know, the Cyberpunk had its, it came to light of the sort of rocky development, but at the end of the day, it's, you can't sit there and just go, all right, come on then, we'll let you off. Like, you said, no, you've got to base it on what's put forward at that time. And the loyalists, maybe not a bit of a strong word, but the loyalists will stay with a product. No Man's Sky is a perfect example of that. And a product can swing it around. But ultimately, that review has to be based on what's put in front. We can't just say, oh, we'll come back to the Cyberpunk in 2 years. At that point, like, what's the fucking point of reviewing it?
Yeah. I think it's a point. Like I said earlier, like, there's nothing wrong with playing a game before it comes out or on the day of release and saying this is bad, and then coming back to it and saying it's good. But either way, you have to be honest. No matter how you feel, you just have to be honest about how you feel on that point of playing it.
The Mad Max game that came out a few years ago, I played it ahead of launch, didn't like it, came back to it a year later. Nothing had changed. It was just a single player game. And I was like, you know, actually, it's pretty good. Because my opinion changed. But oh God, don't tell the gamers TM, your opinion can change.
And on that note, I think we've reached the end of our podcast. Thanks for joining me, Rhodes, Nikki, and Winx. And thank you for listening to this episode. Don't forget to check out GameGrin.com, where you'll find all of our writing. Keep an eye on social media, just search for GameGrin to find out whenever a new podcast goes live, as well as the daily news, reviews, and articles. And finally, if you're subscribing via Amazon Music, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or Stitcher, thank you. And if you can leave a review on your platform of choice, an even bigger thank you. Make sure to check out our 300th episode next week. And until then, game on.